This is tape two. We were talking about Jennison Fieldhouse and Dr. Walter Adams' relationship with Bobby Knight. So we're talking about the closeness you were...
Well, we were seated. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Knight is a very outspoken coach. And he was yelling at the boys, and Walter said, "That's right, you teach him." And he would yell about these things, but Walter never used obscenities, but he would really get under the skin of any coach there. And I remember some Michigan State coaches saying that Walter's presence really helped with a few points margin, made a few points margin. But anyway, at the end of the game, Bobby and I came over to Walter and said, "What's your name?" And Walter just said, "Walter Adam." And he said, "Who are you?" And Walter said, "You know, I'm a fan, a basketball fan." And he said, "Well, what do you do?" Walter said, "Well, I teach at Michigan State, you know, when there's an..." And he said, "Well, you've got to, you know, I'm the coach here in my team." Well, the next year when Indiana played, Bobby Knight looked for Walter as soon as he entered the arena. And he walked over to him, and he had in his hand a bunch of mints, red and white mints that you get at restaurants at the end. And of course, red and white are the colors of Indiana. He gave Walter these mints, and he said, "You stay off my ass, and I'll stay off yours." Well, Walter was... He took Walter out of the game. I mean, Walter couldn't.
His peace offering.
And ever since that exchange, they exchanged gifts every year at the game. And in recent years, Bobby Knight would call and invite Walter to the dinner that he had here the night before the game when they came into town, and Walter would be invited to the dinner, and he'd be there with all the Indiana coaches. They really struck up a very good relationship, and Bobby Knight also called and was very nice when Walter was so ill. He was amazing. And the thing that struck me funny was that David Halberstam was here on the lecture series, I don't know if last year,
yes,
if you were aware of it. Well, in the course of his talk, he mentioned Estes Kefauver. You know who Estes Kefauver is. Walter worked for Estes Kefauver one summer. He spent several summers in Washington working on for different senators on antitrust issues and things like that he was interested in. So after the talk, and I went to the reception and met Halberstam, and I said to him, "I want to compliment you on what you said about Estes Kefauver and bringing him up. I'm sure that 99% of the people here had no idea who Kefauver was, but my husband worked for him as a volunteer several summers and thought very highly of him." So Halberstam said to me, "Well, who is your husband?" And I said, "Oh, you wouldn't know him. His name is Walter Adams." And before I could say another word, he said, "He's Bobby Knight's friend." Out of the clear, I mean, here we're talking about Estes Kefauver. Well, of course, Halberstam had just written a book on basketball. So that's, sure, in retrospect, that's how come he, but he knew about Walter's relationship with Bobby Knight. It was the funniest thing. I couldn't get over that.
That loyalty issue, I think, must have been important for Bobby Knight, too.
I think he is the same kind. Maybe that's one of the things that Walter respected in Bobby Knight. He had he has a lot of difficulties, and I think that he's probably out of tune with his times right now, and therefore I don't know what's going to happen to his basketball career. But loyalty, I think, is something he respected.
The talk about some of the community activities that you've been involved in. When you first got here, anything that you were active in or in East Lansing or?
Well, when I first came, I was a young, very young mother of a very, very young child. I was very busy with my home life. I did join faculty folk, and I was in the music group, the choral group, and then of faculty folk I played the piano for. I accompanied them, as they said. They met periodically. I joined different groups like that. But I'm not much of a joiner of groups, so I wasn't particularly active in as much as I guess a lot of people are, mm-hmm. because I'm not a joiner. And we did spend some time away. We were here 5 years when we spent a year in, Walter got a postdoc at the Harvard Law School. So we spent a year at the Harvard Law School in Boston, and then he was on a research project in Europe, and we lived in Paris for a year. And I was involved in, I guess, in family and
you were there with him, though.
Oh, well, yeah. I went with him. Oh, yes, that's another thing.
Your son was there, too?
Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, it destroyed my son's life. Being living in Paris at the age of 10 for a year. Mm-hmm. He is now, he's an economist. He's a professor of economics at the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. But his field is European economies with a concentration on France.
Oh.
And so he goes back and forth. In fact, I am going to Paris at the end of December for five days only with mm-hmm. my son and daughter-in-law, because mm-hmm. he now has an apartment in Paris, and he wants mm-hmm. to show it to me. Uh-huh. But his life was channeled by that year's experience in Paris. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what you do with your children. You better be careful, because you have a stronger impact than you realize. Mm-hmm.
The experience of being a faculty member of the research overseas in terms of career-wise, professionally, what were some of the things that you really got out of that?
I think I got a lot out of it, and I think I got a lot out of it by being an observer and a spectator as well, because, for instance, there was a little article I wrote called "They Speak Their Language Lovingly." Mm-hmm. That was about the French and their attitude towards their language. That came from just living there, experiencing what it was like to live there, to observe what was going on around me. We went back to Europe nearly every summer for Walter's research, and I'd be observing, and I would be involved with, and somehow or other that made me more contemplative. I was absorbing things that I didn't realize I was, and wondering about them and connecting them to the American experience and sharpening my understanding of American experience and my knowledge of America as in contrast or in comparison. And so I got much more out of it than I realized, and I was in a lot of, given Walter's teaching at several European universities and observing the academic life in those universities was very educational for me and gave me a much broader view, I think, than I would have had just if I hadn't been there, even though there was no formal study that I was involved in. Mm-hmm.
Was that the first time you'd been to Europe?
No, I went. The first time I went to Europe was on Walter's first sabbatical.
I see.
Which was, I think, in 55. Mm.
Okay.
And we went for a month. And And then we began. Then when he began teaching in a lot of places. He taught at the Salzburg Seminar twice. Mm-hmm. He taught at the Falkenstein Seminar. He taught at the University of Ancona in Italy. He taught at the University of Grenoble in France. He taught at the University of Paris in France. And all these experiences were, I got a lot out of. And yet it was indirect.
Mm-hmm. And you traveled extensively while you were over there.
Yes, but it was only in terms of his work. We both like to stay in a place and get a feel of a place, not keep on the... We weren't always on the move.
Always on the train? Or,
yeah, we weren't.
Mm-hmm. In recent years, have you traveled back frequently or...
Well, not as frequently as in earlier years. That's because I brought my in-laws here when they were no longer could manage for themselves, and they were here for 10 years, and then I brought my mother here, and she was here for 5 years. And during the period that this older generation was here, we felt we could not be gone long. So we would sometimes go on a brief trip. Mm-hmm. The last time I was in Europe was in 96, which was about a year and a half before Walter died. Mm-hmm. And we went to Switzerland. We had been, and then our trip next to that, our penultimate trip, was one that was extremely important to him. Because in recent years, he was going back to World War II. And he wanted to retrace his steps in Normandy. And we did that in 93. The 50th anniversary of the invasion of Normandy was in June of 94, obviously. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want to be there with all the crowds and the mm-hmm. formal. He wanted to just retrace the steps of his unit through Normandy. And we did go there in the fall of 93. And we spent 3 weeks just going through. Now, he was also at Battle of the Bulge. He wasn't interested in going there. He wasn't interested in any other part of his war experience. He just wanted that Normandy thing, which mm-hmm. we did. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful that we did. Mm-hmm. But that war in recent years has really just had seized him. And
mm-hmm. Did he attend any reunions of his unit or anything like that? He didn't want that. It was more or less a personal realization of...
Walter,
or he hadn't talked about it. He hadn't talked about it much?
No. Uh-huh. He didn't... The fascinating thing to me is he came back from Europe, from the end of World War II, in September of 1945. He was one of the earliest people back. And when he got back, it was early September, he wanted to get right back to graduate school. And he got into his family's car and drove up the coast from New York. I was teaching in a New York City high school, and I wouldn't break my commitment. Mm-hmm. And he went up the coast, and the first place he stopped was at Yale. He had had 2 quarters of graduate school at the University of Chicago when he was drafted. But he stopped at Yale. And he said, I'm a GI, I have the GI Bill of Rights, and I would like to restart graduate school, that I had 2 quarters at the University of Chicago, and et cetera. And they took him. And he started immediately. He wasn't back, he was just back days when he went right to graduate school. And there were quite a few people in graduate school who similarly were veterans. Those men worked together in a room no larger than this in the library, because I was part of the group. Mm-hmm. And they were working, they talked economics, they talked sports, they talked everything. They never mentioned the war. One of those friends, 2 years ago, who is a professor of economics at Northwestern University, now retired. We met and had dinner together. We discovered that they were in units side by side in Normandy. They never knew it until then, because when they first came back, they never mentioned the war. And they were just weeks beyond that war experience. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yes, amazing.
In looking back at career at Michigan State, any reflective comment that you can think of about your experience as a professor?
Well,
things that stand out.
I am grateful to Michigan State for allowing me to teach, because, as you know, I don't have my doctorate. Although I felt that I did a very good master's thesis that my professor, Carter Goodrich, said, Pauline, if you just add a few more dimensions to this project, you have a doctorate here. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm not interested in a doctorate. At that time I was a kid, I wasn't interested in a doctorate. I just wanted to, but I wanted to teach. I always wanted to teach. And I was grateful that at Michigan State I had that opportunity. And although there were times when I felt exploited, I must say there were times when I felt exploited, but it was wonderful. It was wonderful, and I love this department. I understand that there was cliquey and there were different groups. I was never aware of it. Mm-hmm. And I would move from one to the other in utter ignorance, not knowing that I was violating some kind of territorial boundary. Mm-hmm. And I really had a wonderful, wonderful experience, something I'm very grateful for. Mm-hmm. And I'm still grateful for Michigan State because I'm teaching in the evening college.
So you've been active since your retirement?
Oh, yes. I've been taught every year since I
Every year?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. I've never missed a fall. Uh-huh. In the spring, you know, when Walter retired, he began teaching. at Trinity University in San Antonio. We'd go down in January and stay until May, and he taught. They asked me to teach there, mm-hmm. but I said, I'm not grading another paper. Mm-hmm. I just will not grade another
paper. You had graded enough here.
And the other day, the head of the Honors College asked if I would teach in their program in the summer for Honors College entrances teacher course, and I said, no. Mm-hmm. I love what I'm doing in the evening college, and no paper grading, nothing. I have wonderful students, and yeah, I just love it. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't give up teaching completely. It means too much to me. But I was happy to give up the different committee meetings and the paper grading and that kind of stuff.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project for the time we spent.
I don't know.
And I appreciate your insights. Thank you very much.
I don't know if it was any help. I'm glad. I want to wish you luck in the project.
Thank you.